Can I do the hook?
Do the hook.
Because I prepared one this week.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right, here's our hook. Today, we're heading to the windswept Oregon coast, a place where fog drifts across the highway, the forest presses close to the cliffs, and legends are carried on the salty air. Our story is about a phantom who isn't content to lurk in the shadows. Instead, he climbs right on into your car.
Like in Disneyland.
Yes.
I'm gonna love this story.
Yep. Okay. What's haunting you?
Awesome. I got two quick things. So, first story, this is just a story for you that is only people who are teachers are going to understand this. So I apologize if this doesn't make sense to you, but I was giving a presentation this week.
A lot of people can relate to giving a presentation.
Yeah, I'm giving a presentation to a group of middle school teachers. It's like 50 of them. And I get to a point in my presentation where I have to reference a statistic that's 67%.
Oh, stop it. They did not all go.
10 of the teachers in the room go, 6-7. And then they all, person to learn it was just, like, middle school teachers are just as immature as the middle schools. I think it's adorable. So I lost my audience for like 5 minutes.
I do love middle school teachers. They're fun. I could totally teach middle school someday.
Well, you'd be great at it. It's.
But I love the first through fifth grade. Mm-hmm. They're great. And it's going really well. And kindergarten is going better.
Good. Okay, here's my second thing real quick. So at this point in my life, Lindsay, we've done what, like 50 episodes?
Yes, we just, our last episode was, if you count the Eerie Extra Credits.
Yeah, which is a little short clip.
Our 50th episode.
Woo woo!
Yeah. And we also like six of them that the technology blew out on us. So we really have done like 56.
That's so exciting. 56. Yeah.
Yeah.
We really didn't have a plan when we started. We just said a year.
We're going to do this for a year.
Yeah.
And we've almost religiously done it. Europe threw us off, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then just right now is a crazy time of your life, schedule-wise. Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's a little hard to find time. But I think we really need to just commit to doing it because it's so good. Well, I mean, it has to be good for you too, but it's so good for my soul.
Me too.
This time
Me
for
too.
The two of
I
us.
I love it. And yeah.
It's like the marble thing, you know, the thing, the jar metaphor where you put your biggest marbles in first, because if you put all the small things in, there's no room for the big stuff.
Cool.
So you put your biggest things in, your most valuable things in first. This is one of my big marbles
that
I need to get
for
scheduled.
Your week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you so much, everybody who's listening, who's been listening and growing with us. We have like 2,000 followers and it's just exciting.
It is. It's super fun.
So here's what, so I was saying, at this point in my life, doing 50 episodes with you and doing all this research on weird paranormal things and conspiracy theories, I feel like the algorithm on my phone especially is so full of conspiracy theories that now I can't like trust anything that I'm getting exposed to.
Right.
But there's this one I was exposed to this week that really, really interested me. Because this week was a really crazy week in the news. Like, mm-hmm. We don't have to say what it is, but if anyone wants to look back in history, this was a rough week. So there's this conspiracy called the Pizza Index. Have you heard of it?
You told me about it.
Oh, did I already tell you?
I think you did, but you didn't tell me on the podcast. So give me more details.
The Pizza Index is somebody came up with the genius idea of tracking all of the fast food restaurants around Washington, D.C. and the Pentagon, around the White House and the Pentagon. And they actually have apps and trackers online because the traffic will increase in food deliveries around times of like really significant world events, because everyone at the Pentagon
is hunkered down.
They're hunkered down. They're staying there overtime. They need their food delivered. And so you can see these explosions of like DoorDash and food delivery and stuff around. And some people watch the Pizza Index to predict when big things are going to happen.
Oh, interesting.
Well, I don't know if it's true or not, but it's one of the conspiracy theory things that kind of came across me this week. I thought was really interesting.
That is funny. I'm just wondering, how do you, let's say you're the Uber Eats dude. And you're, or whatever, I don't know. I don't have food delivered because it's so expensive. Mm-hmm. But let's say you're that person. And how do you make a delivery to the White House?
I don't know.
Do you have to drop it off blocks away and somebody comes in? Because I've done a tour of the White House and it is intense.
Yeah.
And I had to have, like, a legislator's invitation to get into the place in the first place. Wow. So I don't know how you would, like, do you attach it to a drone 6 blocks away and drop it off on the balcony?
Right, or pass it off through Secret Service.
Because you can get fairly close to the White House, just walk right up on the back and the front. But you can't in sides, I guess, to the property anyway. But you're still a long ways away from ringing that front doorbell.
Right. That would upset me because I hate cold food. I cannot eat cold food. I get really annoyed when I order delivery food and it comes should be cold.
Hot. Yeah.
So if it's that far away for a drop off, how are they going to do it? How are they going to keep their pizza hot?
Maybe they don't eat hot things when they deliver.
I don't know.
But it also seems like there's a full on kitchen and chef and like cooking staff in the White House. Maybe they just need to like pay them a little extra overtime and feed the people
right there
that work there.
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem like safer, more feasible?
And more secretive.
And more secure.
Mm-hmm, more secure. Because if this theory is correct, then you can kind of know about things that are happening before they happen. Yeah. Now, you wouldn't know specifically what's happening, but you would know that they're at work overtime.
Yeah, and the Pentagon is obviously super secure too, so I'm just curious. How close can you get as... Maybe they have like an intern whose job it is at each site to like meet the food delivery trucks like every hour on the hour. They have to drive out, pick everything up, bring it back, drive out, pick it up. Yep. It would not surprise me if our taxpayer dollars were covering something like that. Okay.
What's haunting you?
Nothing, I don't think. It's been a good week. Taking the big child to college tomorrow for the first time.
So that's so huge, exciting.
Very exciting. I don't know why I feel like I'm sending her to war. There's a little bit of this like, make sure you have everything. As if I can't Amazon something to her within 24 hours. So I'm like stressing about, we gotta have everything. Make sure we have everything. Stop. I can mail something. I can have something. Uber Eats, like,
yes.
I have it delivered far more easily than I can something to the White House. So I need to just chill out. But I think, again, that's, we've talked about it. When you have ADHD brain, you hyperfixate on stuff that does not matter.
Right.
And that does not matter. So I need to actually think about stuff that really matters and give my attention to that. But it's an avoidance thing, and I can't necessarily control it. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I'll probably be pretty emotional tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm watching you go through it because I'm a couple years away from it. So
I'll try to set a good example.
Well, you just be real because I just want to know really what it's going to be like.
Yeah, it's a yay boo kind of thing. So, but I've got good friends, Allison and Chad. We all had our firstborn at the same time and then our secondborn at the same time. And Allison went on and had a third one. Chad and I stopped. But they have both dropped theirs off. And so, I'm like, how's it going? They're doing okay. Aww. One of them, Allison, said she was fine until her son grabbed her for a hug and was pretty emotional. And then she was like, and I'm done.
So send us your stories of dropping off your child at college because we could use them right now.
Especially if they're staying in a haunted dorm.
I hope she is. I mean, she probably doesn't hope she is, but...
I doubt it. It's pretty
modern. I have haunted dorm stories from college. When we went to college together and we lived in Fairhaven, I have some stories.
Really?
Yeah. I'll tell you, like, another time.
Ooh. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Maybe we need to do university ghost stories.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Of the places where we went to university. Because I didn't know that. I lived in Fairhaven and I didn't know that. Oh, yeah.
I have some stories.
Ooh. Okay.
Can I pop this soda?
Yeah.
And just skip this. Okay.
Commercial for bubbly. Sponsor.
I'm drinking cherry bubbly.
And it's refreshing AF. Okay, you ready?
Ready.
So we did our hook earlier. First of all, I want to give a shout out to my buddy Michael. Not to be confused with my husband, Michael. Different Michael. In Oregon. He is on my... he's one of my Teacher Innovator Institute friends. So he's an awesome teacher. And he's in the class of 2025, so this was his first summer in D.C.
Okay.
And then I met him. He had his first week, and then my cohort of 2024 showed up for their second week, and then my cohort stays for that third week while they go home. So anyway, we had a crossover week, and kind of hit it off there, but then since then we've connected on social media and we have a lot of things in common, and he has invited us to come down to Oregon to go ghost hunting with him and his spouse.
Oh my gosh, you and me, he invited us?
Yeah, so they have Oregon, a cave Michael. System in Portland.
Yes, like I love caves.
Underground tour things.
Yes.
Yeah, so we need to get down there.
I like that too, because last time you asked me to do something that involved a flight and that, but I could drive. I can drive to Oregon.
Yes, we can do that. And yeah. It would be a fun road trip. Maybe we stop at a couple places on the way. Or go somewhere else additionally, like where this story takes place. So he suggested this story. He's like, have you ever heard of the blah, blah, blah? And I was like, maybe, but I've never done a story on it. So here we go. Buckle up. Today we're going to go deep into Oregon's coastal fog and forest legends.
Cool.
Have you driven down the Oregon coast?
Yes. And actually, I have a crazy story about the seal caves. Have you heard of the seal caves? On 101 down.
No, but now I need to know.
Okay, so you go 101 down the coast of Oregon, and at some point in the middle of nowhere, you get to this place called the Seal Caves.
Okay.
You take an elevator in the cliff of the cliff face, because it's not.
You did
like,
this?
Can you believe it? Yes. And I took my two little kids with me because I wanted to
did
show
them. Did you know what was happening? Or did you just kind of naively do it? And you were like,
I kind of just made myself. But
oh, good for you.
I thought it would just be like, yeah, it was terrifying going on the elevator down the cliffside. But you get down into a cave. It drops you out in a cave that's filled with like thousands of seals.
What?
Yeah. You would love it.
The seals probably think this is some BS.
Why?
They're just trying to do their seal thing, and people built an elevator.
Yes,
in there?
They did, and then they come down, and you can see. And but here's the thing:
that's what aliens do to us, though. They're just coming down with an elevator, checking us out in our backyards.
Little Rosenbridge. Let's watch these. Yeah, so we got to watch the seals, but it's awesome and it's horrendous at the same time.
Sure,
the smell is horrendous, and the sound is unbelievably terrifying. Like that sound.
A lot of seals in a cave echoing. Why? Who came up with this tourist idea?
I don't know, but I it was a parenting fail because one of my kids especially is like, now they don't like seals anymore. They don't want anything. They won't go in any caves with me. Oh, it completely terrified them. But anyway.
It's like going into a kindergarten
classroom.
Yeah,
I wonder if Oregon Michael's been there.
Oh, like you'll have to tell me, buddy. Yeah, he'll message me on socials. Let me know. He's listened to the podcast now a couple times, I think, and very sweet of them to listen. I love it when my buddies listen.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know the look then, the cliff sides and the fog and
gorgeous.
The trees. It's
and
so
the Goonies
lovely.
Rocks. Yep. And the, yes.
That's in Astoria.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a beautiful town called Claylock.
I don't think I've been there.
Which is a beach side town, I believe. I would, if I'm thinking of the right place, I would live there in a heartbeat.
Mm.
And I remember seeing it when my son and I went down for a baseball tournament a couple summers ago, 2-3 summers ago. And it was just the two of us. And so we drove that 101 coastline and we got to this town and it was phenomenal. Of course, it was a summertime, just gorgeous fairy tale land. All right. Well, today we're going to talk specifically about the Bandage Man of Cannon Beach.
Ooh.
And Cannon Beach, Haystack Rock, is the rock in Goonies.
Awesome.
That's the beach.
I've never heard of the Bandage Man, but I instantly have a picture in my head.
Okay, so we're going to figure out what's true. Well, I don't know if we'll figure it out, but we're going to talk about, there's my neighbor, what's true, what's folklore, and what's in between. So many stories trace the Bandage Man back to the 1950s. Misanthropic Marlowe on Reddit wrote, "I was a child in the community when it got its start. I knew I knew some of the family of the kid that first encountered the Bandage Man. There's an old road that for all the years I was growing up was known as Bandage Man Road. It was just an old section of Highway 101 that had been bypassed when a new section was put in place, but it was still accessible and wasn't very long. Just a short loop off of the highway, the whole thing from end to end could be driven in maybe 5 minutes or so.
Okay, fun.
This loop of road was a popular place for local kids to go park, aka make out. That is where the story started. One night, two of the local kids were up there doing just what teenage boys and girls do when they are parked on dark, lonely roads." That's a real general sweeping statement. But what else would you be doing? I don't know. Anyway, moving right along. The boy had an old Chevy pickup, and his girl and he were sitting in the cab. All of a sudden, they felt the truck sort of lean, like something was moving around in the bed of the truck.
Oh.
They turned to look out the rear window, and there looking back was a bandaged face with only some weird-looking eyes showing through eye holes in the bandages.
Oh my gosh.
The bandaged...
That's terrifying.
I know. The bandaged figure started beating on the glass in the top of the cab.
Jeez.
The kid started his engine, got in gear, and tore out of there, his girlfriend screaming in terror. And let's be real, same with the boy. As the man in the back continued his pounding. Any of you who've been to Bandage Man Road or Cannon Beach know how curvy the roads are, and to drive them at high speed is dangerous. On they went. After what seemed an eternity, they made it to downtown Cannon Beach.
Was he in the back the whole time?
Apparently. Oh. Where the boy's family owned a service station that they lived next door to. When they got there, they looked in the back, and the bandaged figure was nowhere to be seen.
He just got a ride. So he's not in that
same... He just was hitchhiking, I guess.
Yeah. But
you just stick your thumb out. You don't gotta jump in the bed and start banging on the glass. It's aggressive.
Again, this should be a movie. We keep coming up with stories where we're like, why is this not a movie? They could turn that into something.
Oh, I'm sure it has. Something. I mean, because so many of the... It's like one of those... Well, and we'll get into it, but like the legend of the dark road, teenagers making out.
Uh-huh.
There being some sort of weird guy on a terror. Like, it's very Friday the
13th. Totally. And, I like it.
Freddy Krueger type of stuff.
I'm very imaginative. When you talk imaginative, I like picture things in my head, but yeah. I have two different images of the bandage man.
So okay, let's hear both.
Which one it is.
Okay.
The first one is like almost like mummy bandages wrapping around the big, thick bandages where only eyes are sticking out. Remember the Invisible Man movie when they turn? But then I have this other idea. It's like, what if she means he's covered in like those little tiny bandages that my kids constantly
butterfly
steal? Little butterfly bandages and the little ones that my kids are always using up just for whatever. They don't need that many band-aids. And they're like hanging off his face like floppy.
Ew.
Floppy
like they
little...
got wet in the pool.
Yeah.
Half off.
Yeah.
And you could see the little brown red blood stain on the inside of the pad.
100%. That is my second vision.
That's even
vision.
Worse, I think.
I agree. I think that's even scarier.
Because that's weird. If you have that many wounds, why are you using little band-aid brand band-aids? Or bandages. Just get some gauze and wrap that
Is there like any drawings of him? If multiple people, I'm assuming multiple people have like said they've seen him.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about how verifiable these sources are.
Okay.
But not drawings, no.
Okay.
But what the first one that you described is more.
Yeah.
What it like wrapped in bandages?
Yeah.
Like gauze, like mummy type of bandages, and to varying levels of bloody and nasty.
Well, I'm going to picture the second one in my head just because it's a little more
I almost think that's
fun.
Creepier and more psychotic. Okay, so who or what is Bandage Man? Local lore suggests he may have been a logger or a man caught in a gruesome accident, wrapped in bandages, and transported for medical help when tragedy struck again. Some versions say he escaped from an ambulance before dying. Others hint at a murdered hitchhiker whose body was hastily covered. With bandages? Hastily covered. I'm not whipping out the ace bandages and like mummifying him.
No.
I would just throw him in a shallow grave and toss a couple piles of dirt on him. Not that I have plans or any experience.
I'm feeling bad now. What if this guy actually needed help? And he went
then
for
you
help?
Don't, again, let's first of all know your audience. Think about how your actions might affect others. It's rude for an adult to ask kids for help. I will stand by that till the day I die. And if you absolutely have to, because it is the only option, you don't jump in the bed of the truck and pound on
no,
the window.
No, I wouldn't. I think I would, like, walk up to the front of the truck in the lights with my,
like
hands
out.
Like, a
good distance.
And, like, be shouting, like, hey, I don't mean to scare you. Hey, I really need help.
In, like, the highest pitch Mr. McFeely voice you can come up with. Like, you gotta really convince him. Hi,
Can you call? I'm gonna sit here. Can you call 911? I'll just sit over here.
I'm just right here. I'm not gonna do anything fast. No sudden movements. I'm definitely not climbing in the back of your truck.
I can't believe you referenced Mr. McFeely.
You know who that is, right?
I love Mr. McFeely.
Oh, he's so good. What a good neighbor. R.I.P. all of them. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Okay, so Yeah. Those are a couple of the theories about where this, if this is a ghost, like where did he originate as a living being? So, but like many urban legends, Bandage Man thrives in the storytelling culture of teenagers. In fact, the earliest stories link him to young couples, like I said, parked at makeout points along the cliffs. Just when things got cozy, bam, Bandage Man slams against the window, scaring the life out of everyone.
No, this is a story that parents are making up. Like, don't go make out in the
right. Road. So many of these legends come from cautionary tales.
Yeah,
as a, you know, La Llorona and the Boogeyman, mm-hmm. and all these things of like, you just don't want your kids to be doing anything naughty, aka potentially dangerous for them in some way or risky. So you make up some story or exaggerate on an actual factual tale.
Mm-hmm.
To try to keep them in line.
Yeah.
Good luck. Hormones, man.
Yeah.
Bandage man or no bandage man. Doesn't matter. So that was my question. My next question, you beat me to it. Why do legends often involve teenagers parked in cars or people alone at night? What cultural anxieties might those episodes reflect?
Yeah, I think it's coming from the parents. It's like, what am I going to tell my kids so that they don't do anything
that
dangerous.
They did.
Yeah, that every human does.
Because you know that, yeah. They knew what they got up to.
Yeah.
And they knew that, ooh, dodged a bullet there. Or maybe they didn't, hence the reason they have a child. So they just don't want necessarily the same thing to happen. Yeah, cautionary tales. So, yeah, part cautionary tale, part campfire ghost story, but it has grown far beyond that. One story tells of a pickup trucker who felt his vehicle lurch as though something heavy jumped into the bed.
It's targeting pickup trucks.
It's an easy get.
It's easy, yeah.
Like, if you have your hands bandaged, opening a car door handle is going to be tough.
It's much easier to jump in the bed of a truck. I get it.
Well, now that you say it, if your legs are all bandaged up, I'm not sure it is easier. But it's definitely effective in getting someone's attention.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems aggressive. So he felt something heavy jump in the bed. He checks his rearview mirror. There he was, a figure wrapped in tattered bandages, swaying with every curve in the road.
That actually is my biggest fear, is like looking in the rearview mirror and seeing something like in my back seat. Or
I always check. Oh, do you check like before you get
always,
in?
Always. I do that.
And that might be a thing that's some men do, but I know it's a thing a lot of women do.
Right.
We've been sort of trained to, like, park in certain areas, check the perimeter of our car, check the back seat, park under a streetlight.
Yeah, being a woman is being afraid a lot of the time. A lot more than I think men feel afraid.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Okay, so, yeah, swaying with every curve of the road is a weird image. The driver speeds into town, but by the time he stopped, the truck bed was empty. Another tale comes from Cannon Beach locals, who say Bandage Man has been spotted wandering near the cliffs, appearing solid, almost human, until he vanishes into the night.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's kind of morphing. Right? Like, because I'm thinking it's corporeal, like if he's banging on windows, but if now people are saying it's like fading in and out, the story is morphing, it seems like.
Yeah, sort of like the image of him.
Mm-hmm.
So let's pause for a classroom moment.
Okay.
Legends like Bandage Man, and we've already alluded to this, check all the boxes of an urban legend. 1, mysterious origin. 2, a dangerous but oddly specific behavior, jumping into cars. 3, a moral or warning. Don't park where you shouldn't. Don't drive alone late at night. Don't pick up strangers. What's really fascinating, though, is how I think the local geography affects the story. Anytime you have fog, I think a fog is often used
Oregon's
as a cinematic trick
to
create mystery and suspense. And Oregon coast is rugged, isolated, super misty, foggy. Perfect conditions for a legend like this to thrive. Like in the same way that swamp creatures in boggy Louisiana or I don't know what else might, Bigfoot in any forested area, things like that, where just the legends, the location, the geography is ripe for it, so it makes it so much easier to believe.
Right. I think they filmed the Silent Hill movies in Oregon.
Those are movies that I will never see.
It's okay, but I'm like, if no one's been to Oregon, but you have seen those movies, it's really foggy, wet, dark, gray. That's Oregon. I think they
in the wintertime for sure. Fall, late fall, winter is absolutely like that. Same with Washington. We have the same coastline, and you know we have the Twilight movies here.
Yeah,
it's a very similar vibe.
We do.
So here, if we're gonna go back to like, here's the facts. So at and I think this is important because you've taught me this. Like, where's the evidence? We have no verified names of someone who witnessed Bandage Man. I've looked for documentation of credited sources. There are none. But there is a Cannon Beach History Museum that documents this. There's university, I think it's University of Oregon, has a like Legends and Lore course that references it. So it is a part of... It really is a piece of history in legend form, at least, in Oregon. So, but no specific names. Also, no direct, reliably sourced quotes from a witness. And you love a witness.
Yeah, so this story is...
Yeah, it's like a couple, baloney. A man. They no. saw. There's no confirmed testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Wah,
wah. And physical evidence like bandages or blood is spoken of, but not traced in any credible study to a documented incident, accident, or police case, unsolved mystery, unsolved murder, anything like that. So we're working in the realm of legend here, most likely. Let's see.
In my movie that I'm making based on this story.
Okay. Trademark.
People will find little tiny band-aids with wet and bloody. They'll just find them, and that'll be their omen that, like, oh, he's coming to get you.
Can't jump in your truck.
So anytime, because this
everybody
happens,
sells their trucks.
Think about how many times you've found a band-aid on the ground.
Ew.
Right? Like, what if...
Well, as an elementary school teacher, they're everywhere.
But
I'd be so hosed. I'd be like, oh, my God, all the time. And I would never ride in a truck.
No.
Oh, man. Come back to it. So that I do have a question. So you just gave like a movie sort of trope evidence. But what, for you, what would you need in order to believe this story? So do you, how do I want to word it? What would count as strong evidence beyond anecdotal for this paranormal claim for you?
I think I'd have to see him myself.
Really?
But I don't necessarily need him banging on the back of my window. But if I saw him like in a road or...
You'd be like, yep, I'm good. And turn around.
Yeah.
Yep, there he is. He's real.
Covered in Band-Aids.
Mm-hmm. Little floppy ones dangling off his face.
What about you?
I think if someone I knew and trusted.
Yeah.
Like, if you saw him, said you saw him, like, 100% without, beyond a shadow of a doubt, like, your thing with, your experience with the hill.
Yes.
I absolutely would go, okay.
Okay, that happened.
Roger that.
Yeah.
That would be enough for me. Not just anybody, but people I trust.
Right.
So there's one more recent anecdote.
And is this from Oregon Michael? Oregon Michael bring this to you because he's seen it?
He didn't say he's seen it. He said he's heard of it and he wondered if I had heard of it.
Okay.
And so then I researched it and wrote this episode script. But if he has seen it, he most definitely buried the lead because he did not tell me that. And if that's the case, why am I not on a phone call with you right now? You better let me know. This person is STX2019 on Reddit. And she writes, this is my first time on Reddit, and I specifically made an account to post my story about the Bandage Man in Cannon Beach, Oregon. So she gets on Reddit to do this. So I moved to Cannon Beach a year and a half ago from Dallas, Texas. I live in an apartment in town, but also close-ish to the stretch of Highway 101 that the Bandage Man supposedly haunts. January or February 2019, I had a very vivid nightmare. I was asleep and I woke up feeling like someone was watching me and the distinct feeling that I wasn't alone. I live alone, but I have a boyfriend who sleeps over often, and sometimes when I'm semi-conscious, it feels like he's there out of habit. I thought this was one of those times where I was confused and I would wake up and remember he's not here and go back to bed. This time, however, I opened my eyes to a man standing next to my bed.
No.
Yep. And I froze. It felt so real. I looked at him and he was covered in toilet paper. It looked like toilet paper to me. It wasn't dirty, gory, bloody bandages. It looked like white cotton toilet paper. And I was annoyed because why would someone waste that much toilet paper wrapping themselves up in it? It was hanging loosely from his face, going all the way down. The moonlight from my window was illuminating him from the knees up. I was scared and kept thinking, this isn't real. This isn't real. I'm dreaming. Then he gestured like he was lunging at me.
Oh.
Not with his
hands. Like when you're threatening, yeah. the kids threatening each other.
But not with his hands, his upper body. Because he had his hands were bound, right? So it was like his whole upper body was like, whoa. Yeah.
Just to scare her.
Yeah. I do remember screaming, actually, a stifled, paralyzed scream that I could barely make, and when he lunged at me, I automatically squeezed my eyes shut. When I opened them again, he was gone. It scared me so bad, I stayed awake for a while, thinking that must have been a really bad night terror. I'd never had a night terror before that. And then she goes on to say, to summarize the rest of her Reddit post, is that she is not a believer in, like, the supernatural, paranormal, and she and her boyfriend... A few days later, a little while later, go to a con to kind of make fun of it, like a paracon.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of just to mock it, almost. And then she runs into an author who had written historical legends of the area. And in there was Bandage Man. And she read the story and was like, wait a minute. And so she thinks, because of where she lives and what she saw, that she may have had a different kind of encounter mm-hmm. with Bandage Man. So.
Wow. So is it... Is it possible of all, I mean, possible in, with air quotes. But is it possible that this is like some kind of spirit? Because people will say that they've seen spirits, but usually when they claim to see them, they're not covered in anything weird like that. They usually just look like normal people.
Right. I mean, some people have seen, you know, if they see ghosts from wartime or whatever. Sometimes
right, like
they'll have
their uniform.
Their mm-hmm. uniform, or you can see there's evidence of blood or
right.
an injury of some kind.
But is there any time in history when people would have an injury and they would cover them all up with bandages like that? Because I'm picturing, like, I can picture Civil War images where they've got bandages wrapped
around their
half their head or but
no,
a whole body.
No, why would you... I can't think of a time where that would be appropriate. Let's say it's a logging camp injury. A, mm-hmm. what are you doing in a logging camp where you are cut or whatever, head down? Mm-hmm. Like, from what? Did you go through the log thing that, like, strips the bark off the trunk of the tree?
In that case,
I mean, there's the beginning of our story.
Oh,
that's the origin.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, like, now my brain's going, like, he slept with some man, the foreman's wife.
Got shoved
foreman,
in the machine.
Yeah.
But then...
Debarked, if that's a word.
Oh my gosh, it's so gross, but I love it.
You got skinned.
So you got skinned, debarked in the debarker.
But then
they would have taken the time to, like, wrap him.
He's dead.
He's already
dead.
Like,
you're not surviving that.
Yeah, he's dead, but somebody's wrapping him in order for his ghost to appear
right,
wrapped up.
Right, maybe somebody felt guilty and was like, We gotta at least try.
I love that we're rationalizing this.
But you have to. You gotta think, why? Why is it because just mummies are creepy? Well, there's no mummy. There was, as far as I know, not a history of mummification in Western Oregon.
Not that I know of.
Not with
it's
any
very
indigenous
much a mummy story, though. Yeah.
Nothing. So, I don't know. Maybe it's not bandages at all. Maybe it's some kind of clothing that's just really tattered.
Possible.
And really
possible.
Dirty, not bloody. But
maybe
his face is covered, supposedly.
It started in the 50s. Okay, I have a new theory. Halloween takes
okay.
place in the 50s. Maybe some kid, some teenager...
Still does.
...was dressed as a mummy. Someone dressed as a mummy died that night. Out
oh,
trick-or-treating.
Tough. And you're stuck wearing that for the rest
yeah,
of eternity?
Yeah, now it's the poor, like, trick-or-treating ghost.
Well, now I'm worried about what am I... I gotta be very careful about what I wear every day. Because if the theory is you're stuck in that, I'm talking every time I go to bed. Every time. I can't die in the shower.
Oh, I look like trash when I go to bed. Yeah.
Don't die naked. That's embarrassing for all eternity.
I never hear about naked ghosts. I really don't hear naked ghost stories. Do you?
No.
of all the ghost stories we've heard, somehow they end up with clothes in the afterlife.
And usually a high Victorian collar.
Right. And you know, and people have died naked all the time.
All the time. Or in more compromising situations.
Right, right.
So, now I'm worried about that. When I was a little kid, my mom drove us past the cemetery, and we had, apparently some relative, distant relative had died recently, mm-hmm. and she was like, there's, let's say Uncle Earl, I don't know if that's who it was, I did have a great Uncle Earl, but let's just say that's what it was. Oh, there's Uncle Earl, and I was like, that's heaven? And I think it was me. It might have been my sister who said, that's heaven? And then from then on, for some reason, I was like, I got to be ready. And so I packed a suitcase.
Oh.
So I would have things to take with me in death.
Oh, that's cute. But sad.
Also, Disturbed.
Yeah.
There was a perfect segue into therapy right there. And everybody missed it. So...
I like where you're going, though, that it could be something besides bandages.
World War II wasn't far before this. It's before Vietnam, but after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
What if it was like a pilot's uniform, and it was like a seaplane pilot, and it like got shredded by the copter blades of the front of the seaplane.
I guess. That's really a reach. But the pilot outfit would have to be all the same color and cover his face, too.
Yeah, it's the face coverings.
Right.
Why is his face covered?
I have another theory. Okay. It's paper mache. He died in a paper mache accident.
Those art classes be brutal. And if you don't get enough Vaseline on your nose, when it's time to throw those little wet bandages on, you might just die. That is not how I want to go. And also... pick your paper mache partner wisely.
Right. Don't
pick
someone who's going to
cover... any choice in fourth grade art class.
Right. What if they covered his mouth and his nose holes and then you're... That always terrified me when you would paper mache or do anything with your face.
Yes. Yeah. Leave my nose holes alone, yeah. Johnny Payne. That was my fourth grade art partner for making our Native American masks out of paper mache. Mrs. Ross was the art teacher and she was not monitoring nose hole covered
very well. Oh my gosh.
Because we had to cover our mouths.
Yes, I remember that, because I had to do paper mache masks, too.
It was a great project, but I don't know that you'd be allowed to do it now, to be honest.
No, it actually was, like, super claustrophobic, creepy, freaky.
You had to put Vaseline all over your face for those little fine baby hairs, your eyebrows, eyelashes. Oh, there was always a bunch of kids who forgot to put it on their eyelashes, and then they take it up. Mrs. Ross! Did you grow up with... like, any tales like this of, like, a backseat thing? There's one I remember.
I mean, I have, like, memories of just, like, axe murders in the woods.
Okay.
Don't go parking because there's an axe murder out there.
So, I remember hearing ghost stories. I don't know if it was at a campfire or, like, a summer party or something. But it was the story of how there's a young woman and she's driving alone late at night and... trying to get home, but she's a great distance away from home for some reason, and there's a car following pretty closely behind her, making her real uncomfortable, and every once in a while it would flash its high beams at her, and she's getting more and more freaked out.
I think I know this
story.
And
it follows her all the way home, and she jumps out screaming, runs into the house, and her dad comes out, what the hell's going on? And he's like, just trust me. And there was somebody else in the back seat of her car with a knife.
Yes.
And every time he reared up to stab her, the guy would flash his high beams and he would duck back down.
Yes, I have heard that story.
That story is awesome. I love that story.
I definitely remember after getting my license and being a young teenager, being absolutely terrified to drive at night because of
all those silly
camp stories and things.
I still think of that story when I'm driving alone late at night and a little bit when I'm with my daughter on the way home from the theater in Issaquah, like we were last night, because there's one stretch of highway that
18?
Is so dark.
You're
talking
about 18?
Before you get on 18 in Issaquah, between like Issaquah, Hobart, that area. By the way, Hobart, who knew that was a town? But I almost ran out of gas yesterday. Don't tell my husband. And I had to get gas in Hobart, and it was one of those gas stations where it must have been put in the 60s, and they haven't updated anything.
That's cool.
So it was like those old pumps with like...
That's cool.
And I wasn't sure it was going to accurately give me my gas. Pretty sure it didn't. I had to go inside to pay in advance.
That's wild.
The lady had to punch in the number for what I wanted to get.
That's wild.
And I, for $50, I only got half a tank of gas.
Oh my gosh.
I was like,
Hobart.
Hobart be expensive.
Dang.
And it was $92 for a bag of gummy bears. No, it wasn't, but it was a lot.
It will be soon.
I know. The ladies were so nice, but they weren't that nice. It's like, geez, $50 doesn't get you very far in this part of the world. But yeah, so good times, good times. So next time you're driving Highway 101, might be you and me, and feel a sudden weight in the back of your car, take a glance in the mirror. Just maybe, Bandage Man has hitched a ride. Dun, dun, dun.
So ridiculous.
I know. but thanks for joining us for this episode of the Paranormal Classroom. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, share, like, do whatever the things are. Put a star rating on there. Maybe tell a friend the next time you're heading down to Cannon Beach, bring a camera. Ooh, a dash cam, but face it backwards.
Yeah.
Or into the bed of your truck.
Black light would make Bandage Man glow if these are like white bandages. Bring your black light and find the Bandage Man. Bring your black light and tell us if you can.
And there's our soundtrack. We're geniuses. But also, if you've ever experienced strangeness on the thin line between legend and reality, please send us your story at theparanormalclassroom@gmail.com. We would love to read it on the show or even call you, because we can kind of do that. I say kind of do that now. But until next time, stay curious, stay brave, and keep your headlights on.
Ooh. Class dismissed.
And don't open the door.